Thanks for joining us on the JX. We'll spend a chunk of today's show on the Klamath Dam removals. This is an ongoing and major story, not just for our region, but for the whole country. Taking four hydroelectric dams out of a single river would have been a big undertaking if it were done sequentially, but it's being done all at once. The project, removing three dams in California and one in Oregon to allow fish passage, reached another milestone last week with the bypassing of the John C. Boyle Dam on the Oregon side. The Klamath River now flows free around the dam remains. We have this segment and the next one to visit with Mark Bransom, Executive Director of the Klamath River Renewal Corporation. Welcome back, Mark.
Thank you, Jeffrey. Good to be with you.
We also have with us Michael Belchick, Senior Fisheries Biologist with the Yurok Tribe, one of the many partners involved in the project. Hi, Michael.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. And we are live, and we can take emails from you listeners at jx@jeffnet.org. Mark, start us off. Give the overview of the progress and where it stands in relation to schedule.
Yeah, the progress is just astounding, Jeffrey. And the end is in sight for the removal portion of this project. We expect that August will be a big month as we complete the final phases of the removal of the three dams. We've got a little bit of work to do. And then we expect that the dam removal contractor will be demobilizing from the site in the October timeframe. And then the restoration activities really kick back up.
So the October timeframe, that is on schedule then, you're saying, or maybe before it even?
Yeah, we're actually running a little bit ahead of schedule right now. I think by the time everything gets tied up with a bow, we'll be right on schedule. But right now, the progress is simply astounding, and we're really pleased with how quickly and safely and how well everything has been going up to this point.
Michael Belchick, talk about your perspective on the fish impact, certainly short-term from the dam removal, and then long-term. How are things going?
Well, this project was conceived of as a fisheries restoration project, and so that's the way it should be thought of. And anytime you do a restoration project on a river, whether you're constructing log jams or other smaller scale things, up to large scale projects like this, there's going to be what I call a recovery arc. There's the implementation of the restoration causes impacts, and then there's the healing of the river to a state that's better than it was before. And right now we're in the implementation phase of the recovery arc. You can see the impacts here. But as you move downriver, the river is looking fantastic. I was just down there last week, and it's looking amazing.
Talk about where you're looking at. I know I was at the rest area there by Interstate 5 recently, and the water still looked that kind of chocolate milky brown. Where were you seeing and what were you seeing?
Yeah, so I was down on the Yurok Reservation at a place called Blue Creek, and at that time it was just before the sedimentation from the cofferdam breach at J.C. Boyle was reaching, and the river was green. There were fish jumping in the water. The fishermen are reporting much less algae growth this year. We have no microcystin. For the first time in years, the river is not posted for microcystin dangerous contact, and so we still have a little ways to go. We're in the implementation part of the recovery, but patient is expected to make a full recovery here.
Microcystine, is that one of the algaes?
Yeah, so there's an algae species called Microcystis that grew in the reservoirs and produces a very potent liver toxin. And for that reason, the reservoirs and the river downriver was posted for no contact for decades. And this year, there's no detect on all the microcystin. So as predicted, dam removal has fixed that problem.
Michael Belchick and Mark Bransom are guests on the Jefferson Exchange. Michael's a senior fisheries biologist with the Yurok Tribe. Mark Bransom is the executive director of the Klamath River Renewal Corporation. We are talking about Klamath River dam removal. We do have two segments to talk about this, and you're more than welcome to get in on the conversation with your thoughts or your questions to jx@jeffnet.org. Michael, the scheduling of the work has a lot to do with trying to work around impact on fish, doesn't it?
Yeah, the entire scheduling was implemented to avoid the biggest effects to fish. So, for example, the breaching and the drawdown of the dams was scheduled for midwinter, which is a difficult time for contractors to do that. But it was after the fall migration of Chinook, after the fall migration of adult coho salmon, but before swim up and large scale out migration for the juveniles from the tributaries, like the Shasta and the Scott and the Salmon River and things like that. So Ecologically, the river often had large events, whether they're floods or landslides or things like that, sediment introduction events were primarily a wintertime event. So that's why we scheduled that for that time of year.
Mark, talk about these flows, though, of stuff coming out of the dam sites. It sounds like each time you do another breaching, another move to rechannel the river, it's going to send a burst of sediment downstream.
Yeah, that's right. You know, Jeffrey, we had over 100 years of sediment buildup behind these dams, blocked a really important natural river process that's being restored as the dams are removed. But we do have these occasional pulses of sediment that are being released from behind the remaining dams, as you suggest. And this is unavoidable, but it's really important work. So when we drew the reservoirs down, drained out the reservoirs in the January, February timeframe this year, we saw a lot of that 100 years of accumulated sediment move down through the river system and out into the ocean. We're actually monitoring the ocean currents and the sediment as it pulses out into the ocean. But after the drawdown, we still have these diversion dams in place. And the work that you referenced that was done up at Boyle last week was to breach that coffer dam to allow the river to flow back into its historic channel and allow us then to work on the other side of the river valley to remove the remaining portion of the J.C. Boyle Dam. And so these pulses of sediment that are coming from behind these diversion dams are much, much smaller relative to the drawdown of the reservoirs that took place January and February, but they are contributing to the turbidity. So what you observed at the Collier Rest Area along I-5 is presumably sediment that's making its way downriver from the J.C. Boyle Coffer Dam breach. And we will repeat that process at the COPCO 1 site next week. And then at the end of this month, we anticipate doing the last of the dams, the coffer dam breach at the Iron Gate Dam, probably at the end of August or perhaps just after Labor Day. And that really will be the final step in removing these dams and the final bit of sediment that we would expect to release and see move down through the river. But again, 100 years of accumulated sediment that we need to mobilize out of the hydroelectric reach and get back into the river and out to the ocean. And this is a really important part of re-establishing a critically important natural process in the Klamath River and in all rivers.
How much, Mark, is there some sculpting, if any? I mean, to not just to let the river flow where it wants to flow, but also to make sure that sediment stays out of it or anything like that. I mean, are you doing anything in terms of smoothing land, bulldozers, anything like that at the old reservoir sites?
Well, you know, we're not doing anything like that now, but earlier this year during the spring, we had permit authorization to do a little bit of assisted sediment movement. And we accomplished that actually in a couple of different ways. One did involve literally pushing material that had accumulated in the vicinity of some of these tributaries that were lost and buried under the reservoirs, to take that natural sediment and put it into these tributaries and into the Klamath River to try to rebuild the spawning beds and reintroduce that sediment. The second thing that was done, and this really was directed by the tribes and some of the federal agencies, was to do some flow pulses from Keno and Upper Klamath Lake in Oregon to move some water through the hydroelectric reach to pick up some of the sediment and to really move it through the system. As Mike said, we really timed the work to reduce or minimize the aquatic impacts. And these flow pulses that we did were part of that effort to move the sediment through the system when there really weren't any adults in the river, or, you know, we had the opportunity when the sort of the least biologically active time and get that sediment out of the system before, you know, the fish reoccupy the river. And so a lot of the work has been focused on reducing these impacts and getting that sediment through the system.
Klamath River Dams, the topic here in the Jefferson Exchange. Mark Bransom is Executive Director of the Klamath River Renewal Corporation, in charge of the whole project. Michael Belchick is Senior Fisheries Biologist with the Yurok Tribe. and you may have a take on what's going on with the Klamath River, and we'd like to hear it. Join us by your emails to jx@jeffnet.org. Just that part of trying to get the restoration, Michael, this sounds like an incredibly complex process, not just because you're dealing with a stream, the Klamath River, but all the tributaries to it and all the terrain around it. I mean, has anything approached this level of complexity in your work before?
Well, certainly, this is the largest fisheries restoration project in the world, so obviously it's going to be the most complex. But it's really important to understand that the Yurok tribe, who I work for, their mission is to fix the entire Klamath River. And Klamath Dam removal, as big as it is really part of a bigger restoration effort that involves all parts of the basin from the top to the bottom and including all the tributaries. So we have work ongoing. There's restoration work ongoing in the upper basin. We're partnering up with the Klamath tribes. We're talking with Klamath Drainage District, some of the irrigators in the upper basin, about reconnecting Lower Klamath Lake. We're working on the Shasta and the Scott to try to fix those, as well as all the lower tributaries, and even other river systems like Redwood Creek, which is on Yurok ancestral territory. So the mission here is to fix the entire watershed. And dam removal, while certainly a centerpiece and extremely complex, is just a piece of an even broader and more complex effort.
I'm glad you mentioned Lower Klamath Lake. I've always been fascinated by the way in which in that system in the upper basin, a lot of water was sent to places it didn't used to go and was taken away from places where it always did go. And there's a lot of history to work with there to uncover what was done, wasn't there, isn't there?
Yeah, so we've been working with people that live there and work there with other tribes that are from there, the Modoc Nation and Klamath tribes. But certainly, you know, reconnecting the basin has benefits for water quality, for waterfowl, for endangered suckers in the upper basin, as well as possibly being a home and a refuge for salmon. So there's big things going on. There's also a reconnection of a 12,000-acre wetland piece that's going to be happening this fall called Agency Barnes Ranch, which will change the topo map. It'll be visible from space. So these are the landscape-scale restoration projects that not only benefit, you know, fish or a target species, but they benefit a whole ecosystem, waterfowl, and people. They put people to work. There's an economy and a strengthening of the basin that's happening right now from this.
You mentioned waterfowl, but it's also things like insects and smaller birds. I mean, it's all kinds of critters when you're working on an ecosystem.
That's right. It's all tied together.
Mm-hmm. So talk about the kind of work that's been done thus far in terms of replanting and things like that.
Well, when the dam removal started to look more and more certain, the Yurok tribe, well, the first thing we did was hire an amazing restoration botanist. His name is Josh Chenoweth. He worked on the Elwha restoration, and we convinced him to move down to Mount Shasta and become our lead. And so about 3 or 4 years before dam removal even really started, before any contractors were on site, the Yurok tribe was out collecting native seeds from that area. So we were collecting different types of grasses. There's like 18 different species. And not just grasses, but including, you know, like oak trees and other perennial trees and shrubs. And from those, we contracted nurseries to grow them out and collect even more seed from there. And by the time we got to drawdown, we had about 61,000 pounds of seeds, over 17 billion seeds. They sorted them into different kinds of mixes. Restoration Environmental Solutions, the main restoration contractor, they added more seeds. A lot of it was hand-sown by native crews. Some of it was helicopter-sown, all of it native. But that's not all. There was a lot of invasive weed control. People went out, pulled star thistle and other species that might invade the reservoir bed. And so when the reservoirs were drawn down, people were ready. The very day it was drawn down, the crew started to do the seeding with different mixes, and we're not done yet. Come this fall, there'll be a second planting season. About half the seed or a little over half of it's left. The crews will be going back out again and doing a fall planting. especially in sensitive areas and areas that have now are stable enough to walk around on. So it was very well thought out, and a really big part of the dam removal was the ecological restoration.
That's really interesting. I had Josh Chenoweth from the Elwha Restoration, where two dams were taken out the most recent 10 years ago. We'll pick up the conversation about the Klamath River dams and the removal of the four of them from the river. We were talking to Mark Bransom, the executive director of the Klamath River Renewal Corporation, and Michael Belchick, senior fisheries biologist at the Yurok Tribe. We'll continue the conversation into the next segment. You can take part with emails to jx@jeffdet.org. We're back on the Jefferson Exchange in just a bit. We'll continue our conversation about the Klamath Dam Removal Project, which is on schedule, actually ahead of schedule slightly, to set the Klamath River free from Oregon to the ocean by removing four hydroelectric dams that blocked fish passage. The Oregon Dam, John C. Boyle, was bypassed last week. We're catching up on the project and its impacts with Mark Bransom, executive director of the Klamath River Renewal Corporation. Michael Belchick is senior fisheries biologist with the Yurok Tribe, also on the conversation with us, and we want your input as well. What are your thoughts about the Klamath Dam removal process and the river restoration? Send your thoughts to jx@jeffnet.org. Mark, it's not your project or your river, but I wonder if you've seen any of the news about the pending removal of Pomeroy Dam from the Illinois River near Cave Junction and the protests against it.
Yeah, I certainly have, Jeffrey. I've been following the news on some of the proposed dam removals in Oregon, California, and any number of other places. We're certainly seeing an uptick and a trend toward more focus and more emphasis on the removal of some of these older, defunct dams in acknowledgement that these can, you know, have some lasting impacts on the aquatic ecosystems.
You certainly had some people express their opposition to taking out the Klamath dams. They were ultimately unsuccessful, obviously. And then there were post-drawdown complaints, allegations that the river was dead, that the fish were killed. What is the truth there that you researched?
Yeah, you know, there were some impacts that had been anticipated, and I think perhaps the scale of some of the impacts was really hard for folks to wrap their minds around until the conditions were actually, you know, observable. And so I'm not surprised that some people, you know, were set back on their heels by that. We had always anticipated that the majority of the non-native fish, for example, would not survive the drawdown of the reservoirs. And so there was significant mortality there. There was the unfortunate loss of life you know, some deer that became entrapped in the reservoir sediments while they were still wet. We have done comprehensive testing of the sediments and the water and determined that there are no human health or aquatic impacts, no issues with contact with the water. The water does not have constituents that exceed, you know, any human health standard or drinking water standard. Of course, nobody should be drinking water from the Klamath River without treatment or any other surface water body. You know, we did have some project impacts around Copco Reservoir. There are some homes up there that had groundwater wells that were impacted by the loss of the reservoir, and we've been addressing those issues with the homeowners. But at the end of the day, you know, as Mike said, the patient is expected to recover, and I think that includes the communities around the reservoirs and along the entirety of the Klamath River itself. Things are not going to completely reverse and improve overnight, and I encourage people to take a little bit of a longer view with regard to the restoration and the rebalancing of things after dam removal. Our restoration activities are going to go on for a number of years now after the dams are completely removed, and we acknowledge that it's going to take some time. This is the ecosystem healing itself with a little bit of a nudge from us where we think it will be helpful to assist the river and the lands to restore themselves and to bring back that that important balance in the ecosystem. But this is a process, and it's going to take some time, and we encourage people to take that long view and enjoy it and observe the transformation of this ecosystem, because it really is dynamic, and it's really fascinating to observe.
We haven't talked about it yet. What is the ultimate price tag for all of this?
You know, I think that the project is probably going to land right around the $500 million mark, Jeffrey. You know, we were given a budget of $450 million plus an additional $45 million of contingency funding, and we've earned some interest on the money that was set aside for the project. I just would acknowledge that the $450 million budget to complete the project was established sometime back in the 2010 timeframe. The Renewal Corporation came into existence in 2016, 2017. Here we are in 2024, you know, nearing the end of the removal, and we've managed to hold really close to that budget, which I think, you know, when you look at inflationary pressures, including the labor market and fuel prices and things of that sort, you know, we've done a remarkable job with our contractors and our partners in figuring out ways to live within our means. And I'm really proud of the team that we've been able to accomplish that. And that includes money that we set aside to, you know, to address direct project impacts with private property owners, and to try to make folks whole on things. And so I think we've done a really good job with the funding.
Klamath River Removal, the conversation here on The Exchange with Mark Bransom, the executive director of the Klamath River Renewal Corporation, and Michael Belchick, the senior fisheries biologist with the Yurok Tribe. You have a voice in this, too. We welcome your emails to jx@jeffnet.org. Michael, we have an email from Lawrence in Eugene who asks if there's been an accumulation of sediment downriver and or at the mouth of the Klamath River, such as changes to the river bar or estuary.
No, that's a really good question. So further downriver, there is some sedimentation, but it's difficult to tell whether that's from the dam removal or whether it's from the McKinney fire. We had a number of very large debris flows from a catastrophic wildfire that occurred 2 years ago. So large scale, no, we're not seeing large scale sediment deposits downriver. I think upriver, they were within the predictions that we made using sediment and hydrology modeling. So there are some accumulations of fine sediment in certain locations. But it's really important to understand that it's more complicated than sediment bad for fish and no sediment good, or, you know, especially fines. This river was starved of fine sediment for over 100 years from Kopko Dam and Iron Gate Dam. And the riverbed near the dams became immobilized, and that changed the ecology, which favored a fish disease called Cirrhata nova shasta. And so a more mobile bed, we're believing, is going to be much better for fish, and we are already seeing that. In terms of some of the fine sediment, like where it's stored and some of the backwaters and things, I think when we get one pretty good flood event, the river will be largely returned to normal. It won't take more than a couple events to return that river to normal. And when I say normal, I mean a more mobile riverbed, gravel that actually moves, is not cemented in place like it used to be. And so we're looking forward to a more dynamic river. So long story short, yeah, we're seeing some areas of fine sediment accumulation downriver. Overall, especially when you move further downriver, it's looking pretty normal.
Juliet Grable, a JPR contributor, recently reported on some issues with plant restoration caused by horses at the Iron Gate Dam site. What's been happening there, Michael?
Well, Mark might be able to speak to this more. I think what we've seen is an increase in feral horses. We're taking a look at this right now about what it's doing. Certainly there are observable and clear impacts to some of the reservoir replanting, especially around some of the key tributaries around Jenny, and now more recently up near Beaver Creek, which is a tributary to Kopko Reservoir, our former reservoir. Mm-hmm. Mark, do you have any more info on that?
Yeah, I would just add, Jeffrey, that in response to the impacts that Mike articulated there, the Renewal Corporation's contractor is installing fencing that will serve the objective of excluding this horse herd from the sensitive lands that we are working diligently to restore. It is work that's ongoing, and by this fall we will have completed the fencing and excluding the herd of horses. just as we prepare to gear up for the next round of revegetation activity. The impacts are, multiple. There is, the denuding of the recently planted vegetation through the trampling and the horses eating that vegetation. But the other complicating issue is that the animals are importing some of these invasive and exotic species that we've been working really hard to keep out of the reservoir footprints. And so the fencing will accomplish the goal of excluding them, but animals will certainly have access to other water sources. So we are not concerned about that. They can access the tributaries in the uplands and so on. So that fencing work is ongoing with the goal to complete that in the next couple of months.
Mark Bransom and Michael Belchick are guests on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about Klamath River Dam removal. You're talking about how the river looked. Michael, by measurements, things like temperature, what are you seeing in relation to what you had hoped to see by this point?
Well, one of the things that those reservoirs did was have a profound effect on temperature. They basically delayed the cooling down of the river in the winter, and they delayed the heating up of the river in the early spring. So right now, what we're seeing is some of the lowest water temperatures on the entire main stem Klamath are in the Iron Gate Reach, and this is as expected. We're seeing a big return to a more normal temperature regime with large fluctuations between high and low temperatures. But in particular, the low temperatures are falling really low at night, and this is a good indicator that we're going to get good low temperatures come the fall time. So the river used to cool from the top down, from J.C. Boyle down, the river would be the coldest up there. And the salmon would migrate through warmer water in order to reach that cold water. And that enabled them to have an earlier run timing. And so the dams pushed the run timing back about 3 weeks. We're looking forward to seeing some fish run through the lower river, use thermal refuge, some cold fronts and things like that to migrate up. Because earlier spawning fish hatch out earlier. The young are bigger. We're looking forward to warmer water temperatures in the spring. And I'm not talking warm to the point of being deleterious, but just warmer temperatures cause earlier hatch up. They cause faster growth rates, more food is available and things like that. So we're already seeing the return to normal or natural of the river temperature. And it's really encouraging right now.
In terms of when fish come back, I mean, what's the place you're going to stand and watch, and what are you going to be watching for, Michael?
Well, there's a big-time monitoring program being put in place. It's really encouraging. It's a big team effort with the tribes, with the Yurok and Karuk tribe and National Marine Fisheries and the state of California and Caltrout to fund. And so what... It's going to be difficult to see, to stand somewhere and see the fish, but what we have is an ultrasound monitor. It's basically an underwater telescope that uses sound waves to be able to view fish. And so we're installing one of those. There are going to be spawning surveys. And, the place that I would go would be Iron Gate Dam. I think we're going to be putting the sonar a little bit further downriver from that based on logistics and locations and available locations. But, what I'm looking for is in the reservoir footprints and in Jenny Creek. But in particular, of all the habitats that I saw, it looked like the former Copco Reservoir is just going to be an amazing salmon factory. It's low gradient, meandering river. We're looking forward to the river uncovering its old gravels and spawning beds, things like that over time. And that's the place I'd be keeping my eye on.
The way you describe it, it almost sounds like a patient in a coma coming back to consciousness.
It's exactly right. But you know what? The river remembers and the salmon remember. They're going to go right home. I think what we've seen in projects around, whether it's undamming or rivers freeing themselves from landslides, long-term blockages, like, say, on St. Helens, which destroyed a couple rivers, within 10 years, the fish were back. So the re-occupation of former territories and habitats is built into their genetics. And so I think they're going to come back. I don't think it'll be instant. Like Mark said, it's going to be a process. It's going to take some time, but the salmon remember.
Mark, what's the projection about when people would be able to look at the Klamath River and not realize there ever was a dam or a lake there?
Well, certainly by the end of this calendar year, after the dam removal contractor has demobilized from the site and all those large, pieces of yellow construction equipment are no longer there, people driving around the former dam sites, looking over the edge, really just won't be able to see any, remnants of the dams or the powerhouses or any of the pipelines or other facilities that, that were part of the hydroelectric project. The river through the reservoir footprints is flowing freely and the lands are being restored and recovering. And it's already taken on the look of a system that has undergone a major transformation. And as Mike and I have both said, it's a very dynamic and it's changing rapidly. So I really do encourage people to come out after the dam removal work is complete and drive up along the river and have a look at those those pull-off places where it's safe and you can get a good view to look down and watch this process in the coming years.
Mark Branson, Michael Belchik, Klamath Dam Removal, thank you so much.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
Thank you so much for having us.
This is The Exchange. We'll be back.